Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. While helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you. The sun is out, the sunrise amazing, and almost feel like we have this San Diego weather forecast going on for the next week and a half.
Doesn't get this hot in San Diego.
You're probably right. But sunny.
San Diego is sunny, but yeah. 73, 74 tends to be the median high temperature year-round down there.
Yeah. So yeah, that's why so many people love it, because it's just perfect.
It's warm winters and cool summers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's some more Arizona in the winter.
I think it's the light, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Not the blistering heat, but it's actually just predictably light all the time.
So. And Dr. Mixon's wearing the shorts.
Yes.
Yes, summertime shorts.
Summertime shorts, that's
right. Good. Well, I thank you for joining us. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Dr. Jerry Mixon here in the studio. Dr. Samira Umat, you are back.
I'm back.
Yes.
It's been quiet in the office this last week, but it's been fun. We've been steady and busy.
Good.
Yeah.
I like busy.
Mm-hmm.
Busy troubles are good troubles in a business.
Yeah, there you go.
Slow, nothing to do troubles are scary.
Yeah, we don't like that. Yes.
No, bad.
No, we haven't had that, Dr. Mixon.
Oh, well, the first show of July. Here we are. Did you have
That's
a wonderful 4th?
Yeah.
I know, Dr. Mixon, you usually have all the red, white, and blue jacked out at your house.
We didn't this year. It was an unusual year because we were on our little road trip this year.
That's right.
So, you know, we got home just in time for the fireworks, but not our normal, you know, house full of Chinese immigrants.
Okay.
That we normally have on the 4th.
Okay. But you got some red
We were actually, it was fun, unplanned, but we ended up spending the day downtown Kirkland at the waterfront, enjoying the parade, and it was just nice. Completely unplanned, ran into friends, had lunch. It was just nice to see everybody out, the kids, the parents, grandparents, and the parade. And got to just meet strangers, say hello to strangers, and just enjoy the day.
Yep. There's something about a hometown parade.
Yes.
Everyone waving those flags, red, white, and blue, a sea of that.
Yes.
So nice. I think we had 17,000 is what they were estimating in our little town.
Nice.
So, and that's always good. Every year they estimate a couple thousand more.
Yeah.
And the weather just made it even better.
Absolutely. So. The weather was just divine.
Good,
I know that. Did Seattle even have a 4th of July parade?
I'm not sure.
I don't think
I'm not sure. Yeah, I kind of like the hometown ones where you see the bands.
The ultimate blue city. No, racist, autocratic 4th of July parade for Seattle.
America, yeah. What? Oh, boy. Hey, we're going to give you the phone number right now so that you can call in and get in the queue. We already have a caller waiting there. Wonderful. Our phones sure are working. We had one week without phones.
Yes,
what's going on?
We were talking to each other for 2 hours.
And we did it, yes.
We did it.
Lots of information.
Right, yes.
Here is that number to call, 1-800-465-8770. Both doctors here and ready to answer your calls. 1-800-465-8770. Dr. Mixon, you want to talk about road trip, or should we dive into this first call and reward them for being first?
Not especially road trip, but let me just a real quick comment on an interesting study that, you know, I check my email even on road trips.
Okay.
and there was a recent study published on cognition with aging.
Okay.
I thought was really interesting. First study where they actually took 100 cognitively healthy people, 65 to about 85 years old, so, you know, older group, and They did objective cognitive testing on them to find out what their brain function really was. They did brain imaging with tracers in their MRI, looking at the hippocampus and the amygdala and the areas that often shrink and lose capacity with aging. And then they actually drew blood and measured the nutrients in their bloodstream. And correlated all of that information with where they scored on their cognitive testing.
Okay.
Which I thought was really kind of interesting. First time I've ever seen brain imaging, and not just a diet diary, you know, where it said, tell us what you ate last week sort of thing. They actually measured and ran testing for the nutrients.
Nice. Okay.
And so that people couldn't fib and claim they were eating a healthier diet than they really were. And fascinating, but a reassurance for what we have thought we knew for a long time. The nutrients found in the bloodstream of the highest cognitive functioning people were the same nutrients that are very rich in the Mediterranean diet.
Okay.
So plenty of fish, lots of green leafies, lots and lots of colorful vegetables, modest amounts of meat, but, you know, some there. You need your proteins, too.
Yeah.
So basically, the old-fashioned Mediterranean diet turned out to provide the nutrients in the bloodstream that correlated the best with people whose brain imaging and cognitive testing indicated the healthiest brains in their later
life. Nice. It's also the oils, probably, the olive oil, olives.
Yeah, well, of course, they didn't have this olive oil. They broke the olive oil down to the fatty acids that are found in olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
But also, yes, but that's really what it was. The fatty acids you would find in fish, seafood, seaweed, olive oils, nuts, you know, walnuts, almonds. No great surprises, except that it was just a great validation of the purely objective data without the fudge factors of asking people what they eat.
It would be interesting to see that then with someone who had, you know, the potato chips, the pop, the, you know, all the bad stuff.
See, you know, it's hard to give up those things because they are designed to make you crave for them.
And they taste good.
Yeah. And the more you eat, the more you want them.
Yes.
And so people really find it very difficult. Try telling somebody to give up their diet soda and they go, what? I'm not giving that
up. At least it's diet.
Yes.
What?
And
chemicals.
So they, you know, the food industry has done a very good job of making people addicts. But really,
the marketing and the branding.
Yeah. But it's the most unhealthy thing on the planet for you. And if people can make a change there, a few simple things will really, you know, help them a long way, at least in terms of memory, but also in other things as well. So exercise and food are the top medicines. People who practice what we practice will tell patients all day long, food is medicine, food is medicine, food is medicine.
Yes, and some food is poison.
Yes, sure is.
More medicine, less poison in your food.
That's right.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I had a homemade chicken salad sandwich on the way down today. Celery, a little rotisserie chicken.
So you didn't make the chicken.
No, I did not. No. But it was not a canned chicken either. All so right, it was so a nice big chunk.
Not when you raised, you know, under the front porch or something.
So if you're smelling onion, you'll know who. I can't do eggs right now.
I'm not doing eggs in the morning.
Right. Found out I had an allergy to them.
That's right.
And normally that's my go-to.
Yeah.
Two or three.
Every morning.
And
see, that's the value of the food sensitivity test. When Leisha and I were recording earlier this week, she said the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
She realized that she was allergic to eggs, and so she had to give up eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, she thought she wasn't feeling better until she went back to the old diet, and she goes, Oh my God.
Yeah.
It was better.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had to switch around again.
Yeah, switching around. Yeah. It's like, okay, I don't want to feel that way, so not
right,
a problem.
Because right.
maybe someday we'll go back to that.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
Taking your calls, 1-800-465-8770. We have two doctors in the studio. We'd love to talk with you. Dr. Jerry Mixon here, Dr. Samira Umat. And we're going to take a little road trip to Florida for our first call. How about that?
Okay.
Wow. We have Ben's on the line. Good morning.
Hello, Benz.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for all your work, and thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, sir. How can we help?
Okay, well, on the 1st of July, I had some blood work done at the request of my nephrologist,
mm-hmm.
and he reviewed the exam with me on the 3rd of July. And he was concerned that I had some blood in my urine.
Well, that is concerning.
So I just thought I'd ask you. I have not had that before, but I have the occult blood. It was a plus two or two plus.
Okay. So you got...
And then the RBC, 10 to 20.
All right. So... Not a lot of blood, but you've got some red blood cells and positive occult blood. So, yeah, clearly you do have blood in your urine. The question is, where is it coming from? And we've really got three choices. You got the kidney, you got the ureter, and you got the bladder. And any one of those three can be putting blood into the urine. If you've got a nephrologist tells me you've got some chronic kidney disease, so that's probably where it's coming from. What is your creatinine running at?
Recently, which by that I mean about the last 3 months, about 1.7.
Okay, so you've got some real embarrassment there. And your GFR?
GFR is running between 40 and 42.
Okay.
Okay.
So you've got a significant amount of kidney disease. GFR should be over 60.
Yeah.
And the creatinine should be no higher than 1.1. We like it even below that if we can get it there.
Do you have some underlying kidney or bladder problems, or was this the first time you had positive red blood cells?
Well, thank you for asking that. This is the first time that I'm aware of it. But I was seeing a urologist, mm-hmm. Well, I still am, I guess. And, primarily he diagnosed that I have urgency issues more than anything else.
Okay.
And so he prescribed to me Dolaflexin, Sulfonylurea tablets. However, since May, I have not taken those because it just doesn't seem to be that I don't seem to need them.
All right. So you're not having much urinary urgency anymore?
No, not that much. Nothing in the usual. One thing I noticed that the Dr. Jimenez suggested I use that. Muscle relief with the magnesium, and that's helped me with the sleep at night, and then also the cramping that I've had from time to time.
Good.
So I only get up like usually once, which is about normal, I think.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And then one thing though that did come up, and I'm hoping this will drop down. I did do the a blood work. Because I was in Washington back in June. My PSA was 6.94.
Okay, that's too high.
Normally, normally it's down around 2.
Yeah, yeah. So if in June it was 6.9, and when you did it, what, 3 to 6 months earlier, and it was somewhere around 2?
On March 14th, it was right at about, someone say, 2.4.
Okay.
And then in July of 2023, it was like 2.2 or so.
Okay. So, you know, 2 is a very, very nice range. We like it there. Jumping up in less than 3 months to over 6 is rarely going to be a cancer, a tumor. When it rises that high that fast, it's normally an inflammatory process. An infection is what we normally would think of with that rapid rise. Put that together with a little bit of blood in your urine and a prostatitis, inflammatory process in the prostate and or bladder is most likely your issue. Tell you what, the music is playing. That means we got to take a little break, but we'll be right back.
Yep, stay right there, Benz. We'll talk more about this and what the cause could be. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. Our phone number to get through with your questions, 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. See all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be bright,
scorching day.
Scorching day. And it is. Don't forget your sunscreen. We're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette here with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. We're talking to Benz. He had blood in the urine, and doctors are trying to figure out what possibly could be going on here.
Benz, in your urinalysis, did it give you a white blood count, WBC count?
White blood count. Let me see. Would it be WBC?
Yes, WBC.
Yeah.
Yes, white blood count is 6.9.
Mm. And that's from the urine?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, hang on.
See, it's different. If it's in your blood, 6.9 is fine. If it's in your urine, that's a no-no.
Okay, so urine. Oh, white blood count. There's none seen.
Good.
Okay, good.
All right. So that tells me you probably got a prostatitis, an infection in the prostate. So, you know, you need to zip on over and visit with your urologist a bit. You've got a nephrologist for your kidneys and a urologist for your prostate. And, you know, let him take a look at this. They may want to do a prostatic massage and then collect a culture. You know, push some fluid out of the prostate and culture it just to see what may be growing in there. Although viral infections in the prostate are more common than bacterial, but it can be either. So, you know, need to take a look at that. If it's a viral infection of the prostate, it'll probably clear, just like a viral infection of your nose and throat will usually clear in a week or so. Viral prostatitis usually burns itself out and goes away, although somewhat slower. Bacterial infections, of course, we can then treat with bacterial agents. So it's a matter of, you know, trying to sort out if we know what it is. First diagnosis, then therapy. If you don't know what you're treating, the chances of treating it effectively are pretty poor. So,
do you have any pain?
Do you have any pain?
I have. Sometimes I can feel like my kidneys in the back. It feels, but it's been feeling like this for a long time. Sometimes a little bit more than others. It's kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like kind of like when you work out and you feel sore. I can feel it in that area. And then sometimes I feel like my stomach, like I have like stomach ache. Not real bad, but just a little upset stomach.
But not in the back, like a kidney stone or something like that.
Oh, no.
No.
Nothing. Okay. Nothing.
Yeah. Because kidney stones will also cause.
Yeah, but usually so much pain.
Pain, yeah.
It's hard to miss that one.
Yeah. Could I ask you, because I like hot peppers, chili peppers, is that something that would aggravate the prostate or kidneys? Or?
No, it should not. No.
Okay.
You know, it's kind of interesting. Men, young men ejaculate frequently, and it keeps the prostate cleaned out, basically. Your prostate, the vast majority of your ejaculate when you're having intercourse is prostatic fluid. It's not actually sperm. The prostatic fluid is the fluid that provides the nutrients. It's got enzymes in it to dissolve the mucus plug on the cervix, and it's got nutrients to keep those sperm alive for about 3 days while they're hanging around up there waiting for an egg to come by. But that very rich nutrient broth in older men, as their intercourse drops down close to zero, it just gets stagnant. And you have this very rich fluid that is designed to keep things alive sitting there just waiting for a bacterium or a virus to come by. And now you've got this wonderful nutrient solution designed specifically to keep stuff alive, sitting there in the prostate, not being emptied out a couple of times a day like it did when you were 18. All right. Wow. And so as men age and their sexual frequency drops, prostatitis becomes more and more common. It's just a matter of, you know, one of the good Lord's jokes, you know, women's plumbing is designed to be fine until they use it and then it falls apart. Men's plumbing is fine as long as we use it all the time. And so, you know, okay. our plumbing is designed to be used. Theirs is designed for a couple of kids and quit. So,
okay.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. One other question I have, of course, is unrelated. I don't know if you can address it, but I had the EKG when I went in to do my test at the lab there at Tacoma.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they had here possible missed beats.
Okay.
And I don't know who I would talk to. Because the doctor is going to review the CHL or Cleveland Health
mm-hmm. uh-huh.
lab.
Sure.
Is that what it is? I had that done on the 7th of June, and they're going to review that with me on the 10th.
Okay. Yeah, which is next Wednesday.
Oh. Right.
Yeah, the occasional missed beat in those of us over about 60 or 70 is not a big deal. You know, mm-hmm. The sinus mechanism that triggers our heart to beat rhythmically and regularly has been used for 70, 80 years at this point. And like everything else, it gets some wear and tear. It doesn't work quite as perfectly as it did when we were 18 or 20. And so sometimes you drop a beat. If it's happening a lot, you know, if you're dropping every third beat or something, then we're going to get really excited. But if, you know, that machine counted 100 beats and you drop 3 out of 100, nobody's going to get terribly worried about it. All right?
Okay.
All right. Okay, Vince. Well thank you for the call, sir. Mm-hmm. And listen, take this Florida weather that we're enjoying right now back to Florida and give us our nice, mellow, moderate Washington weather again. Would you please? So,
okay, well, I'll do my best. I'll work on that.
All right.
Very good.
I'll take care, my friend.
There you go. Thank you, Vince.
Okay. Bye-bye, Vince.
Oh, at least we're not in Texas where it's...
I know. I talked to a friend in Texas yesterday. It was 104.
Oh. Oh, wow. Yeah. All the friends that have said, I'm out of here. I'm moving to Texas. It's like, okay, you live through a summer and then we'll talk to you.
Yeah.
You know, no. I love the summers here.
Right. Yes.
Not so fond of the gray. It's not the rain. Rain doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. It's the gray. Yeah. Those weeks and weeks where the sun just doesn't peek out at us. That's what drives me crazy, which is why usually in the winter I find a warm, sunny place to go for a couple of weeks here and there to, you know, to get my sun quotient.
Yeah. You should get it this week, that's for sure.
Yeah, no. This week, I went out at 6 and I did my little morning jaunt.
Good.
A few miles on the trail. Staying on the sunny or on the shady side of the trail.
Yes, on the shady side of the street.
And I'll do my... I'll do the radio show. I'll take my wife out to lunch afterwards, and we will stop and buy me some glasses frames.
Oh.
And then find someone to put some non-reflective plain glass in the glasses. My wife has decided I look better with glasses.
Oh, she likes you in the glasses?
She likes me in glasses. So she has said, well, just like, you know,
Dr. Gilbert likes.
The ophthalmologist, he wears glasses because it makes me look better. My wife has decided I look better in glasses. And she said, if you're going to be doing these live stream videos, I want you to wear glasses. So we're going to go buy me some glasses and put regular glass in them.
Okay. Right.
You should probably go to Michael's office. They have some nice frames there.
Yeah. You could borrow his multicolored frames that he likes to wear.
And then we will go hide in the air-conditioned house and stream a movie the rest of the afternoon.
There you go.
Good, good. And we're going to take a break here in just a moment. Dr. Mixon, your daughter is on her big trip. She's been there now a week.
We are getting pictures by the score from her every day.
Wonderful.
They went to the Blue House, which is the Korean equivalent of the White House.
Okay.
And that's the presidential residence. And did the changing of the guard. And, yeah, she's running all over Korea right now.
All right. Yeah. Sounds like she's having a good time.
12 years, just turned 12 in April. And this is her first trip away from mom and dad for more than she's done 5 days at little summer camps. But this is 12 days in South Korea, and all the other kids on the trip are older than her.
They're all
a year or two older, so 13, 14. She's the only 12-year-old on the trip. But having a wonderful time.
Good.
And, it's good for her. Mm-hmm. Mom is going to pick her up on Wednesday. She flies out of here on Monday afternoon and goes to Korea, picks her up on Wednesday, and takes her to China for a month. And then I will be without both of my girls until mid-August.
Okay, so, just the kitty cat.
Just the kitty cat.
Yeah. And us, of course, every weekend.
Yeah. Well, I got friends.
And he's at the office all day.
Yes, that's true.
So the office all day. I can work as late as I want. Right. I've got friends that are anxious to entertain me.
I think Dr. Michael Gilbert was one of those saying, okay, we've got to go do something.
That's right.
Let's go bond and do something. All right, I hear the music. We're going to take a quick break. Phone lines are wide open for you. We want you to take advantage of that and get in with your calls about your health, a recent diagnosis. Maybe you don't understand some of those numbers on your chart, or maybe the doctor spoke too quick and you don't know, what's happening to me? We would love to have you call in and be part of our show today. 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine.
If you got a problem, don't care what it is. If you need a hand, I can assure you this. I can help. I got two strong arms. I can help. It would sure do me.
Let me help. Well, I'll let you talk to the doctors and they can help. I'll just get your name and where you're from. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samiri Umat. I'm Lynette. We are headed to Bothell. We have Matt on the line. Good morning, Matt. I hope you are enjoying the show outside on your deck with a cup of coffee, perhaps.
It sounds
I haven't been to the deck yet, but I do have the cup of coffee.
Okay. How can we help, Matt?
So I have some questions on strokes. I had a stroke on May 18th. It affected my left side, leg, arm, speech, all the normal stuff. So what I wanted to find out from the doctors was after all the tests and things they did on me, the best guess was that somewhere up in my head where the carotid artery splits, there was maybe one of those veins or where it splits there had some cholesterol blockage in it or some plaque blockage in it where probably maybe a clot had formed.
Okay.
And then for some weird reason broke loose and found its way into my head and caused the problems I'm dealing with now. So what I wanted to kind of find out was, now that I'm at a higher risk, as they say, of having another one, obviously, besides recovery, which I'm working my tail off on, I want to obviously minimize that. Mm-hmm. And so do you have, I know you talked in the past about, I thought I've heard you talk about getting rid of plaque in your blood vessels and diets for that and certain things. So I wanted to kind of see if you could readdress that for me and let me know what the best path would be to try and, if there is a blockage in there or a partial blockage, mm-hmm. how do I get rid of that thing?
Okay. Well, let's chat about that just a little bit. Yeah, thrombotic stroke is what you're describing. You know, there's two different kinds of stroke. Hemorrhagic stroke, where you break a blood vessel in the brain and actually bleed into your brain. And if it's an artery, a high-pressure vessel, those are most often fatal. And if they don't kill you, they leave you severely damaged. So, you know, the good news is those are relatively rare. The vast majority of strokes are what you're describing, the thrombosis, where we have a clot that either forms in the brain or a clot that forms outside the brain and then is carried to the brain by the arterial blood tree. And so, you know, those can start down in the heart and get pumped out of the left ventricle and get up into the brain, or they can more commonly start in the carotid arteries. And at that branching of the internal and external carotid artery that you referred to, that is indeed the single most common place to have a thrombus. I am presuming that as part of your workup, they did at least ultrasound flow studies of your carotid arteries.
I'm sure
they they did two CT scans, one MRI. The MRI that he showed me did show, from a view coming straight down at the top of my head, did show what he said was the two branches. And you could actually see the circles, if you want to call them that. And the one circle had kind of a shaded area in it where he was looking, saying, this is where we think you've got some cholesterol plaque, some plaque buildup on there that possibly that's where it formed and broke off from there.
Okay. But you're not describing a ultrasound flow study. They can actually using ultrasound, put the transducer right at that area, at what's called the carotid bulb, and measure how much plaque there is, how much narrowing there is, and how much blood flow you've got, and how turbulent that blood flow is. See, smooth blood flow indicates an open vessel with very low risk of another stroke. Turbulent flow is what usually triggers the clotting process and the narrowing. I suspect maybe, you know, you may not be aware, but I hope they've done that study, which would be taking a good look and be able to say, okay, here's how narrow it is. You know, is it 60% narrowed, 80% narrowed, 90% narrowed, et cetera. If it's up in there 85, 90% narrowing, they usually want to go through and do something to open it up acutely, usually a surgical procedure, something like an endarterectomy, or if it's less, then they want to do what you're talking with us about, and that is to change your diet, your lifestyle, your medications, and see what we can do to clean out your clots, clean out your plaque throughout your coronary arteries, and not just your heart, your neck, your feet, your legs. I mean, it's all one arterial tree. And what we really want to do is put you on an aggressive program to start pulling plaque out of every artery in your body. And, you know, this is a program that we're actually have one of our doctors with a special interest in right now, Dr. Brazel here in Kirkland, who is working on putting together a program for our patients to do that very thing, for people that are getting some narrowing so we can open up their arteries. I've also got a cardiologist who has recently expressed an interest in joining us, and that's what he wants to do with us, is to run a program to reverse the arterial plaque. It can be done.
Yeah,
and there are some good books out, which is a good place just to start to educate yourself. And there's one by Dean Ornish called Reversing Heart Disease. And I know it says heart, not brain, but the fact is arteries are arteries wherever you are. If you're cleaning them out in your heart, you're cleaning them out in your neck too, right? In fact, Dr. Ornish's first arteriogram showing that he could do this successfully were on carotid arteries. He had people that were 90% narrowed, and in over an 18-month period got them down to 40 and 50% narrowed. Mm. So it can be done. He was doing this as far back as the 1990s. It kind of shocks me that this is not standard therapy in the 21st century. But for some reason, we're still focused on waiting until people have their stroke and then intervening.
Well, you see, that comes back to what we keep talking about all the time is prevention, and nobody wants to pay for prevention. Yet, the treatment for what you just had should have started way younger. How old are you, Matt?
I'm 65.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the planning and the treatment and the strategy really should begin when you're in your 30s, literally decades ago, because this just didn't happen overnight. This has been happening over years and years. And then just reach to the stage where the blockage caused a thrombus, which then caused a stroke. Lucky for you, your speech is sounding great today. I'm hoping that your strength in your arms and your legs is back as well.
I'm walking. My leg is coming back. Obviously, the leg came back sooner than the arm.
That's right.
The arm is everything's moving again. I'm working on my hands or my hand. I'm up to about three laps around one of the regular high school tracks.
So three quarters of a
walking
mile.
Before. Before Good. I start getting my leg starts getting a little floppy, but. Yeah. So we're working on that and just trying to do everything. We're doing PT. I'm doing acupuncture. I'm doing Chinese herbs. I'm doing all kinds of things.
Okay.
So are you on any blood thinners now?
Yeah. So when I was in the hospital, they put me on a high dose of Eliquis.
Yeah.
Along with a high dose cholesterol pill, even though my cholesterol was not abnormally high or anything. They just wanted to go after it.
That's right.
They got my blood pressure down. We're working on getting it down between the 120s and 130s.
Good.
It was in probably the mid 140s at the time. Mm-hmm. So just recently, they took me off the Eliquis. We went to a baby aspirin. Mm-hmm. And but we're still maintaining the other items. And then, my biggest concern obviously is. You know, once you have one of these things, you have that underlying thing about, am I going to wake up in the morning with another one?
Yep. Well, and statistically, you have a very high chance of it happening a second time within the next year or two, which is why it's really important to get you on an aggressive program right now to reverse these arterial plaque. And so, kudos for what you're doing thus far. Mm-hmm. But you really, really need to be on an aggressive diet, weight loss if you're carrying even one extra pound, increasing muscle mass, using the appropriate polyphenols and so on to drive down your lipids and to improve the endothelium, the lining of the artery. To make it as smooth and flow, so things flow as laminar as possible with as little turbulence as practical.
Right, and typically after a stroke, your stroke was in May, the first 3 months you'll get the most recovery, and then the first 6 months you'll continue to get some recovery. 1 year out, then the chances of recovery minimize.
Pretty stable.
Yeah. So as inflammation is decreasing right now, now is your chance to kind of do whatever you can. Diet and lifestyle are going to be basically the cornerstones to help you reverse this and change this. And then we do use nutrients and supplements strategically to help our patients in the recovery process. So if you're on a statin, that's a good thing right now, because statins not only lower cholesterol, but they also lower risk for stroke.
They decrease inflammation.
Yeah.
Right.
And so using statins, you do develop nutritional deficiencies, and we basically help you counteract those nutritional deficiencies.
There's other things, too, that we can do that will decrease your risk. The PDE5 inhibitors, the anabolic steroids, there are things we can do that will open up your vessels, make them flow as quickly and efficiently as possible. So, you know, if you...
I thought I was doing all the right things, taking my fish oils, my resveratrol, my curcumin, my fish oils, everything. I was doing all that. We eat chicken and turkey a lot. We thought we were doing all the right things, and then this kind of snuck out of nowhere.
Yeah, well, and that's Dr. Mixon's fourth rule of medicine and life. You know, you can do everything right and things can still go to hell.
Well, you see, that's the other thing too, Jerry. People don't do objective measures. If they do a little bit of blood test and he says my cholesterol's okay, then nobody does the Cleveland panel to really look at lipoprotein particle A, look to see what is happening to the inflammatory markers, or do a little bit of imaging like a calcium score. It's hindsight now. We don't know, right? And so we shouldn't dwell.
Right.
But the message here is the earlier the better.
Well, and he should be doing them now.
And he should definitely be doing them now.
He should get all of that, you know, subfractionation of his lipids. And he should be, you know, the same things that we would do had he not stroked yet.
Mm-hmm.
And if we had done a test and saw that he had narrowing of an artery and we said, let's open that up, we should be doing that right now.
Mm-hmm.
But
so I know you've talked in the past about the small cholesterol, large cholesterol. I understand it's a test called an NMR.
Yes. It's a fractionation. It's a fractionation study. Any physician can do it. We do it through the Cleveland panel. So we call it, you know, we do it through the Cleveland Heart Lab. They're excellence in heart diagnostics. So we use them. We do run fairs for people who are not our patients as well. So,
but there's a lot of different labs that do the study.
Yeah, Quest does it too, and others do.
They just call it different things.
Yeah, but it is a fractionation study. That's exactly right, looking at particle sizes.
Very good. All right, Matt, hopefully this is helpful.
Yeah, my last question was kind of like, what do you do if you have the small cholesterol?
All right, well, we can address that a bit when we come back. But
all right.
Music says we got to take a break, so we'll be back.
Yep, stay right there, Matt. And Alex and Dick, we're going to get to your calls as well. Here is that number to get through on the call queue and get in line with your question for the doctors today. It's 1-800-465-8770. We'll be right back. Stay right there. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. Glad to be here on a beautiful Saturday morning. Dr. Jerry Mixon here, Dr. Samira Umat, and on the phone finishing up with Matt about cholesterol.
Yeah. Well, Matt, there are a variety of different patterns that are recognized when you do something like the Cleveland Heart Panel. And depending on which pattern it is, it kind of directs us to which interventions, which things will be most effective to help. I mean, this is one of those things that we really can't treat on the radio. Okay, we need you to come in, become a patient, let the doctors run the studies, spend the time, you know, a few hours going over them. You know, they spend an hour with you over and over and over again. You know, every couple of months, and send you for follow-up studies. We do flow studies on your artery over time, looking to see if we're making progress. And we'd repeat your fractionation studies. It's not once in a lifetime. It's We look at the pattern. We see what we need to improve. We put you on a program to improve it. We bring you back in 3 to 4 months, and we draw the panel again and see what kind of progress we're making. You know, yes, this can be addressed, and it is something we address aggressively because we think it's important. But it's not. I can't become your doctor on the radio. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work that way.
No, that's no problem.
So, but you know,
all right. Thank you very much.
You take care, sir. Bye bye.
All right.
But Matt, good luck to you. Hope you have a smooth course after this. Take care of yourself. It's really important. You've highlighted something very important, which is basically the sooner you get on it, the better. You know, people when they're really healthy, that's when they really need to get started.
This is one of the things that has been bugging me for some time, but I would love to bring people into this clinic when they are in their 30s to early 40s. Not their 60s, 70s, 80s. It's a lot easier to prevent damage than it is to fix the damage after it happens. And yet, our whole medical care system is designed to treat damaged people, treat people that have already developed the physiologic damage, and that we tag them as a disease, and now you have something you can treat. We need to be starting earlier. The problem is, insurance companies don't pay for early treatment. They don't pay for prevention. They'll pay for vaccinations. They'll pay for that. A few of them will even pay for, you know, some gym memberships. But that's about it.
Yeah.
And that's not adequate.
Yeah.
Longevity Medical Clinic is, in fact, I think, the ultimate preventive medicine clinic. Our problem is getting people to come in before they've got the problem. And nobody wants to pay for medical care before they feel sick.
No, they don't. And that's really unfortunate, Jerry, but it's so true today. Matt's problem started, you know, like I said earlier, 2 to 3 decades ago. But at that point, he was not aware of it. Neither did anybody point it out to him, nor did he go to visit with his providers to see what was happening. But we have had patients with his same history. I've had a patient with his same exact issue who told me that he had a very brief, a few second episode of a TIA, and he went to see his primary care provider, and she said, you know, maybe nothing. And I said, let's go ahead and do the CMT test. And he was sent straight from the Doppler study to surgery.
Yeah.
They did not even let him go home. That's how bad his blockage was. But his symptom was a fleeting second or two of a TIA, and it resolved completely. But he got lucky in that he gave us a symptom or something was going on. And then, you know, you jump on it, right? So you have to come in and let us take a look. We do calcium scores routinely on everybody. We want to look to see if there's calcified deposition or not. We know it's old plaque, but then it drives us to do a little bit more for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, what people don't realize is their first warning of a stroke is the stroke.
That's right.
The first warning symptom
of heart disease,
of a heart attack, is a heart attack.
Yeah, if a heart disease is a heart attack, and it can kill you.
Yeah. People talk about, you know, the warning signs that, well, you know, if you're getting short of breath with exercise, or you're getting pain across your left arm or your chest or your jaw, then we need to investigate. He said no, because the first symptom of a fatal event is dying.
Yeah.
Most of the time, people feel fine right up the time they topple over and die or are permanently damaged from their stroke or their infarct that, you know, kills part of their brain or part of their heart. And then they're limited in many ways for the rest of their life.
If they make it alive. And the problem is that heart disease is reversible. The issue is, you know, we can manage this. We have the treatment available for this. And the problem is, why haven't we done it?
Yeah.
The statistics are still that in America today, heart disease is the number one killer. But it shouldn't be.
No.
It needn't be.
It needn't be. We can reduce your risk of dying of heart disease. Well, let me go to the second biggest killer of women, which is breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Women who have had no hormonal interventions of any kind, never been on birth control pills, never been on estrogen for menopause, nothing, have a 320 incidence of 320 cases of breast cancer per 100,000 woman years. If a woman have had some hormonal intervention, either birth control pills when they were younger, because that's estrogen, or they've had some estrogen with menopause. We reduce that down to about 200 cases per 100,000 woman years. If they are on estrogen and testosterone, we can reduce that down to about 116 instead of 320 cases per 100,000. And if they're on continuous testosterone therapy, we can reduce the risk of breast cancer down to 50 cases per 100,000. And that's if we start them on therapy in their 50s. Mm. If we start them on therapies in their late 30s, early 40s, we can probably reduce that down to 2 or 3 cases.
Wow.
Instead of 300. So, you know, when you start and how aggressive you are with your therapy makes a real difference. Mm. So we could make breast cancer almost non-existent in America, except for those women that are unfortunate enough to have genetic predispositions. Mm-hmm. But the incidental breast cancer risk in America could be dropped to close to zero if we started men on aggressive therapies for their hearts and brains. We could reduce their incidence of strokes and heart attacks from 30% to 2%.
Wow.
But we need to start them early.
Yeah, and women too, you know. In heart disease is recognized so late in women just because they present atypically. But the incidence is high in women too. And we can make a dent here. We can change this.
Well, I'm going to quibble about your word, though. Atypically. No. Their presentation is typical for women.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you use
which is not the same as men.
Yes. If you use the way heart attacks present with men, then you're going to consider women atypical. But women have different kinds of hearts than men. You know, this foolishness that men and women are interchangeable based on your mood and your beliefs is just silliness. We have different hearts, different lungs, different brains. We are subject to different diseases because we are radically different creatures. Okay. And your feelings, your identity are immaterial. You are male or you are female. And males have different hearts, brains, lungs, bones than women do. And they are subject to different diseases, and they present with their diseases differently.
You know, it's very interesting that in research studies, women have never been chosen in the past. It's only recently that most of the research has also been done on men. And so we really have very little data about how women present in certain things.
Yes.
But in heart disease, where a man would typically present with left-sided chest pain or shoulder or jaw pain, a woman will not present like that. So well, her presentation is different.
She has a different kind of heart attack.
Yeah.
Okay. Men tend to block off one big vessel. You know, and if it's the left anterior descending, we call that the widowmaker. They just die. Mm. If women don't do that, women tend to have multiple small infarcts, and which is why they don't get the symptoms. They will shut down a small vessel and kill a little piece of heart. And a while later, they shut down a little tiny vessel and they kill another tiny piece of heart. And so they end up killing off little tiny pieces of heart hither and yon, scattered around until they don't have enough muscle to contract properly. And we say, oh, sorry, ma'am, you've developed congestive heart failure. Mm-hmm. And women's incidence of congestive heart failure is far higher than men because they kill their hearts differently than we do. We kill the whole damn thing. They kill little tiny pieces here and there.
Little tiny pieces.
Yeah, and it presents differently. They don't get our agonizing pain because they're not killing half the heart. They just get a little discomfort or a little fatigue. So they're tired one day.
And they blow it off as just a bad day. Maybe I got a little virus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, I'll just
and
keep
so
going.
And so they never recognize it. And they don't go to the doctor because they don't feel bad. Or at least not bad enough, because they don't connect being under the weather for a day or two with a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Boy, we want you in early.
We want you in your 30s and 40s.
Yes.
Send us your kids. Send us your nieces and nephews, for goodness sakes. Because people that listen to this radio show tend to be old.
That's right.
And we'll do what we can for you.
Yes, we will.
But I can do a whole lot more for you if I start in your 30s and 40s than if I start in your 70s and 80s.
There you go. Okay, we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment. You stay right there. Alex, we're going to talk with you next. Dick and Lee will be with you as well. Leading Edge Medicine continues right after this break.